Hello, Corey Johnson.
Hi, Farooq Tash.
And hello, audience, to the officially unofficial inaugural episode of White Knight Academy. This is a podcast about inclusivity, feminism,
diversity,
social commentary,
equality,
social issues, equality. And my name is Farooq Atesh. My co-host is Corey Johnson.
Hello there.
And we care deeply about these things. And because of that, we figured we just have some conversations. And in those conversations, we will hopefully unearth tough issues and perspectives that, you know, that could be helpful.
Well, both of us just needed another excuse to be angry about something.
Yeah. No, exactly. This is this is Rage Management 101.
This is Rage Encouragement 101. But no, in all seriousness, no, this came out of a shared interest of caring about empathy and caring about equality. And we were inspired by some other great episodes of podcasts that came before us, and we wanted to make the leap ourselves and join the conversation about it.
Yep. One of those podcast episodes that Corey mentioned is Mike Montero and Katie Gilliam's Let's Make Mistakes, which I was a guest on a couple of weeks ago. And during that episode, we basically had, I think, what was it, a 90-minute conversation? It was more than an hour.
It was a long time. It was the best episode.
It was a really long discussion about internet culture, generals, discrimination. Actually, I think that episode is a good starting point, because Mike started that off asking me, why do I do it? Why do I pick fights with people who misbehave on the internet, and why do I tweet and blog about these issues so much and fight so actively for them? And my answer at the time was something along the lines of, like, because I care, but I think more accurately would be because it is my responsibility.
And why is it your responsibility?
I think for anyone who claims, like I do, to truly care about equality and to not accept the status quo, I think you have to play an active participating role in fighting it.
Mm-hmm.
What about you, Corey?
Well, I have the benefit to not be subject to a lot of the things that I see other people do. I personally haven't had to deal with too much negativity in the workplace, in social events, and I haven't noticeably been the subject of it. So in a way, I guess you could call me privileged. Funny thing, Matt. So in a way, it's kind of, you could say that it's also my responsibility, because I am in a traditionally marginalized group, ladies. But it's also something that I can't help but feel strongly about. When I see people subjected to treatment that is inherently wrong, if they're not fully trusted, they're not afforded respect, and they're not empathized with when they're struggling. My mama grizzly comes out.
Yeah, I think empathy is a really core aspect of all of this,
mm-hmm.
where it's about, you know, do we have enough empathy to understand that other people come from different walks in life, mm-hmm. have a different perspective on things, have a different experience of the same things.
Yeah, it seems like our geek world, which I think you and I are both deeply entrenched in, has a particular challenge with it. There's a blog post that came out this year called When Geeks Have Empathy Problems. And we'll link to everything that we talk about in the show, of course. And the gist of the article, which I think was very, it was very, very earnest and very, very, very articulate, I think. One of the better examples, I think, of to articulate this issue was that the urge to be not perceived as the bad guy is so strong in humans, but for some reason, particularly in geeks, because we pride ourselves on being, you know, right about science or right about, you know, what that character's name was in that one episode of that show, that we kind of balk when we're lumped into this group of perpetrators and bullies
and savages.
Oh my goodness, everything that we traditionally have, it's what we're against. We don't want to smell the stink in our own culture when we've been trying to, you know, when we've removed ourselves from it. I think a lot of the times that geeks will feel that you know, we're a little bit more evolved than, you know, the unwashed masses. So we're
more sensitive, perhaps, would you say?
Would you say
maybe this is geek pride that is very strong, but also very sensitive or fragile to criticism?
Mm-hmm. I think when you get any group that's been itself kind of, it's like part of its identity is that it's in a marginalized culture itself, you get a kind of exclusive in a sort of protective way attitude that people from the outside look down on us, so we have to band together. But when there's, you know, when there's something rotten in Denmark itself, you don't want to point it out, because that could, you know, that would be admitting that we're just as bad as them, and that's horrifying.
Mm-hmm. I think there was an article about that not too long, and we'll have this in the show notes wherever we end up having the show. It was about attacks on negative reviews of Batman The Dark Knight Rises.
Ooh.
And
first, I have very strong feelings about that. I have not seen The Dark Knight Rises as
me
of this
neither.
Recording, but I have seen the other Nolan movies, and I got to tell you, I feel like I'm in a marginalized class myself where The Dark Knight is concerned.
That's a subtopic we'll get into in a second.
I did not like it. You
have seen the movie.
I have not seen the most recent entry.
But you have seen the previous two?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
The point was, however, the article addressed how so many geeks lashed out at the reviewers who gave even the slightest bit of criticism to The Dark Knight Rises. Not even necessarily a negative review, but criticism, just in any way at all. Mm-hmm. And part of that, I'm trying to remember who the author was, but the author addressed how geeks feel very protective of geek culture, despite the fact that in today's mainstream society, geek culture is more dominant than sports. If you look at movies or TV shows, certainly for movies, all of the big summer blockbuster movies are all comic book hero movies and adaptations and sequels of, you know, geek world.
Well, it's a nice sign, you know. It's not all bad news on this show. It is a good sign that you know, the main mainstream, if you want to call it mainstream popular media, has seen that we as in geekdom are many, we are numerous, and we have a lot of enthusiasm and purchasing power. And so when we're kind of appealed to broadly with these big superhero movies, we show up and we like cool things, it turns out. So you have those two kind of factors that there's a lot of us out there, and the things that we like are cool.
Okay, so about that, though. what measure is it that we can say, you know, these things that we like as geeks are cool? Or is it perhaps more a culture of inclusivity where geekdom, at least in its truest and sort of more original form, is actually much more inclusive and welcoming to new perspectives than previously dominant cultures like, you know, the jocks and their sports culture? Is it really that things in geek world are more cool, or is it a combination of things? What do you think?
Oof, that's a big one. way to front load the hard questions first. This is not like taking the SAT, which I actually enjoyed because I'm a geek. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good one. I think that the things we like appeal to a quality that's in us that excites a lot of interest, a lot of focus, enthusiasm, and a real excitement about sharing it with people who also like those things. So it's sort of like geek is not, to use a couple terms that I'm recently trying to get a full grasp of, geek is not prescriptive, it's descriptive. So if you like a thing that isn't, you know, traditionally geeky, like, say, fantasy football, but you're so into it and you really get into the nitty-gritty and you learn all the stats and you study up on it and you're really enthusiastic about it and you almost evangelize about it, that, I think, is a quality of geekiness. I think that will reflect upon your inner geek, that you geek out about things.
Right. It's an obsessive attention to whatever it is you're so passionate about, that you're not just liking it, you're loving it.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to know more about it. You want to know everything about it. You want to know the ins and the outs of it. Or maybe you just like want to know how to create a costume for the character in that one show that you enjoyed and you thought he or she just looked really awesome in that completely over-the-top, ridiculous costume. But you don't care. You know, you don't care that they look ridiculous in, or they would look ridiculous in real life, but in the context of the show, it's completely appropriate and it's permitted, and, you know, no one makes any criticism or jokes about it. It's just, you know, that's an outfit. Or
I actually,
an activity, perhaps, or.
That brings me back to a really happy memory that I had from high school. When I was in high school, Cartoon Network came out with Toonami, the after-school program that had anime was becoming really big, and I was about the age where you discover your anime love. So I got super into Gundam Wing, and for Halloween that year, I got a black turtleneck, and I got a couple a black pair of pants that looked like jodhpurs because that's what he wore, and black lace-up boots. I got a wig that I cut bangs into and tied up in a long braid. And I cut out a little piece of white paper and stapled it to the neck of my, because I wasn't going to get an actual cowl.
Right.
I stapled it to my turtleneck, and I was Duo Maxwell from Gundam Wing. That was the first time that I ever dressed up.
How old were you?
I was probably 15 or 16, and when I went to school, it wasn't a very overt costume. They knew I was wearing a wig, but they weren't sure what it was. But everyone who recognized me was super enthusiastic about it. They thought, you make such a good duo. That's so cool. Oh, you're Duo Maxwell. So I felt like I was really celebrating something that I loved in a way that made me really happy about who I was. Because I felt like I was being myself, being Duo Maxwell in that moment. And I never looked back. I was just, no one made fun of me for, you know, dressing like a guy, because he was a guy with long hair, so already there you go. And everyone was super supportive. The anime club loved it. My friends who didn't know anything about the show were supportive. It was really cool. So that first experience can really hook you. It can just get inside your cheek and just pull you in. So
right, and conversely, it could really turn you off from the whole geek world and geekdom in general if that first experience had been really bad, like if you had been made fun of.
Yeah, I couldn't. I probably wouldn't have dressed up again.
Right.
Yeah.
So inclusivity and the attitudes of geekdom, in your case, and but I think in many people's cases, have contributed a lot, I would say, to making that community grow significantly over the past 15 years, feel very welcoming towards a lot of people. And now we're kind of seeing some backlash towards that with, with the current kerfuffle around this guy who wrote a blog post on the CNN Geek Out blogs about the San Diego Comic-Con experience and how booth babes need not apply to cosplay at these events, and he was getting all unhappy and alienating towards anyone who doesn't somehow fit his standard of being worthy of the term geek. I think the main thing here is that he's hardly the only guy. He's not some random lone person in this who's like, oh, all these people, blah, 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 rah, 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 angry. I think he definitely, you know, whilst at the Comic-Con, spoke with other guys who felt similarly angry about this sort of change and more mainstream adoption of their in quote marks, geeky culture.
That was an interesting article for me to read. I just read it, so it's very fresh in my mind. I went into it prepared to be angry, which is not a good thing to do, but it's always refreshing when you come out of it not, you know, having been surprised a little bit. I read it after I read a response to it from John Scalzi, who is a noted science fiction author and whose response includes his veto of this guy, his I don't think it's his actual, it can't be his actual name. He goes by Joe Peacock, which just conjures up all sorts of fun pickup artist / Joe Sixpack / Joe the Plumber images in my mind. But anyway, so John Scalzi pulled rank, essentially, said, I am a published author. I have been nominated for awards. I am kind of a big deal in the science fiction, not, you know, in literature world. I've been to conventions. I hold court. And just quite legitimately, I overrule you in your complaint because I see it as erroneous. And to a large extent, I agree with that. I read quote-unquote booth babes need not apply, which is a weird title because he wasn't talking about booth babes, I don't think. He did, interestingly, he went to great lengths to qualify his points and say, one, he's very happy that there are more women participating in Geek World, which is a well-intentioned statement, and I think it's based on his personal observations. I don't think it's reflective of the fact that there have been women involved in geekdom forever, but from his perspective in the circles he's going to, he's seeing more women, and that in his view is a good thing, which in my view, his view is a great thing too. And he also says that harassment isn't cool, and guys who ogle and shout things or, you know, try to hit on inappropriately or say stupid crap online, that is not cool. He kind of lost me at the point where he equated those two things. I believe in his article he said, I'll look at the quote that he was saying that's not cool. The harassment isn't cool, but being the object that typically would invite that harassment is also uncool, as if they were kind of totally equal. Now that might not have been what he intended to say, but it was an odd juxtaposition. And I think he was shooting himself in the foot throughout the article, I felt, because he had very conflicting viewpoints that there are a lot of positives to seeing women, but there is, in his view, this like subsect of women that are not the true geeks, and that's the issue that we're kind of talking about right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, I got the feeling that his perspective is that if you come from, well, in his examples, he's talking about models in particular, and I think maybe that's where he got the whole booth babes terminology from, because they are models for hire, and
but they're not models for hire. They're
right, not these
wannabe
people.
Models. Mm-hmm. They're auditioning.
Essentially, yeah, exactly. I mean, who would the only models for hire at con would be companies that have booths there and try to sell you something, but mm-hmm. I would say 90 plus, probably more like 99% of the people attending in a costume are there as just attendants, and they're just there because they're passionate about this, and they're dressed up because they want to, because they like it, you know, because they're their favorite characters in some show or anime or cartoon or otherwise.
Yeah, he's getting at a very prevalent kind of phenomenon that I think is mainly imagined, which is attention whoring. This is the quote from his article. He makes note of the website Fat, Ugly, or Slutty, which is awesome. He read bits of that, and which are men who send gross, unsolicited messages to gamers that they figure out are female to harass them. You know, call them names, threaten them, and sometimes send them pictures of their penises, which is so delightful. And he said that kind of thing makes him angry. So this is what he says. Is this type of harassment deserved? Not at all. Are guys acting this way toward women just as disgusting and base as women poaching attention from our culture, satisfying their egos by strutting around a group of guys dressed in clothing and costumes from a culture filled with men they see as beneath them? Absolutely. So that is like kind of the crux of the article, and that's where he loses the credibility for me, that he's
absolutely,
that he's like for, you know, Because,
well, I think it starts with the term poaching.
This is where my ability to be articulate breaks down.
Right. Well, I think so. For me, it started when he starts using the term poaching mm-hmm. attention from our culture. That phrase just that irked me, because.
And it's a nice way of saying attention whoring. That's what he means.
It's not even a nice way of saying it. It's just a different way of saying it.
It's a PC way of saying it, because it's published on CNN.
Exactly. But it's also so very, I don't know, I'm trying to find a word for it. It's attention seeking in his own way for him as a writer to try and, like, it's just provocative enough that you know people are going to respond to that sort of phrasing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then to call them poachers again and sort of like continue with that line of arguing, you know, Felicia Day is not a poacher, he says, or he writes further down, like, she's a celebrity, but she's a pretty girl. Oh, that's another thing. I'll just do constant use of the term girl for all of these women.
That's a whole,
oh god,
whole
but that's
another
that's yeah, that's
discussion.
An episode of its own.
We'll put that aside. But yeah,
so like
there's a distinction he's making between quote unquote poachers and people like Felicia Day, which is that I think to him, Felicia Day is a contributor. She makes things. She adds to the culture by
making things,
writing and being, being depicted as a character in shows and being kind of a hero to just female geeks and male geeks alike.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
She works on podcasts and shows.
Yeah.
She does acting, but also very super geeky stuff where it's geeky in its true form, you know? It's just like, hey, very self-expressive without any concern of how other people may judge you.
Right. The problem with making that distinction, though, is that's in his perceived view what a contribution is. That, for one, it's how he perceives a contribution, and two, that her way, that way of making contribution is valid the ways that these other people are making contributions is not valid. That just showing up to a con dressed in a certain way is not
contributing.
Right.
Right.
Which is weird because I wonder if he actually talked to these people or if he just saw them and had a conversation and wanted to strike up something and say like, oh, you're dressed as this character from this game. Have you played this other game? And they say, oh no, never heard of it.
Now
I wonder
something to talk
at what
about.
Point, yeah, I wonder at what point they became disqualified in his view, like, or how much direct interaction he had whatsoever, or if this was all secondhand stuff that he heard from other congoers who were, for whatever reason, complaining about it. It's weird to me that this whole attention whoring thing kind of got a rise out of him and out of whoever
enough
else.
To write an article about it.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
It's incredible to me. I really wonder what it is about being a particular body type or attractiveness level, however subjective you want to get with that.
Right.
How that kind of is sort of, there's backlash against that. I don't get that.
Right. I think where I was getting with earlier, I think his term or his origin for geek is, you know, you have to start out being this wildly unpopular person who sort of like powers through the harassment and the bullying in primary school and high school, and then becomes an adult and no longer has to deal with that, and now you're a proven geek. You have stuck to your convictions and your passions with your comic books and your anime shows and whatever it might be, and you've endured and suffered. Whereas he seems to very specifically target these quote-unquote model type women who he presumes, I would imagine, never had to deal with that and are now entering this very popular mainstream in the making culture of geekdom and participating in it because it's the hot new thing, and maybe, you know, maybe they can cash in on it somehow, or maybe they can just like prance around and enjoy the attention they're getting from a different crowd. I don't know where exactly he's coming from, but I get the feeling that his requirement for his criteria for being a geek come in some way or another from attractiveness and perhaps like unhappy childhoods. You know, just all these things that have nothing to do with geek.
Let's not project.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. There's another part of his article where I think he does. Nowhere in the article does he really explicitly say these are women who are paid to be there. It seems like he's singling out people who are, I guess, auditioning for those kind of roles just by showing up. But
right, or not even auditioning, but just like enjoying the role of being
enjoying the attention.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but it's. But another.
That's his perspective, right? That they're there to enjoy the attention. When I think for a lot of these women,
which is an assumption.
It's an assumption. But I think for a lot of these people who dress up, it's much more about the joy of doing so, the expression of doing so, and the pride they have in crafting this costume. Sometimes extremely elaborate costumes with body paint and. I saw one photo of someone who was dressed as a robot carrying a squid-like person in a cage. And everything from like the waist down was robot gear and costume. And then this person, I don't even know if it was a man or a woman, I think it was a guy, basically created a cage around from the waist up to above the head. And then there was a fake robot head on top of that and a fake robot back. And the person was essentially the squid inside the cage, but it was just a torso of the person.
Awesome.
And tentacles, like fake tentacles, streaming out from the torso out of the cage.
What, was he Krang from Ninja Turtles?
No, it wasn't. It was. I don't know. It didn't.
That'd be a clever way to do it.
I know, but it was different. It was a very interesting interpretation of Krang, if so. I think it was from something else entirely. But this was truly one of the most elaborate and complicated costumes I've ever seen. And what John Scalzi also points out is that these costumes must cost a lot of money to actually create. A lot of time, energy, and money to create something that elaborate and complicated. Plus, there's the money they spend on traveling to San Diego, the money on hotels and everything, the conference ticket.
It's a lot to invest. It's a lot to invest. Getting attention.
Exactly. Just to get, you know, just to walk or strut around for the attention of some guys. I think women don't really care to spend so much money on that if that was their goal.
It's not a singular goal, I don't think. And, you know, I'm not in a position to say whether it is or not. I know that if I were, if I had picked out a costume and I was wearing it well and I wanted to show off both my costume craft and how awesome I looked in the costume, I would definitely wear that to a con, but I would also be going to the con because I want to go to that con.
Right, exactly. I think... The other aspect of this is you could just say, you know, you could just point to Halloween. Why does anyone dress up?
Yeah.
Is it, I mean, sure, there's the sort of like stereotypical idea that women will dress up as a slutty version of whatever, you know, profession du jour.
But I think I want to see a slutty Teddy Roosevelt. I really do.
Now I've lost my train of thought.
Well, so back.
But in general, right? Just people dress up for Halloween. Yeah, you know, some people will dress up in a sexy way, but I think for the most part, people dress up because it's fun. Certainly, as a child, you would dress up for Halloween because it's fun, because you take pride in creating your own costume and showing it off, and you go trick or treating, and you show the entire world. You know, how you're not just a ghost, you're this very elaborate ghost, or you're a cowboy, or, you know, whatever you might choose to be.
Yeah. The sexuality dynamic is something that gets layered in, I think, when it becomes age-appropriate, but it rarely, in these instances at least, it rarely is the primary objective. And even if it was, that doesn't negate its legitimacy at all.
Right.
I really don't get why attention, quote unquote, attention whoring is objectively a bad thing. I really don't.
I think that's where the booth babe commentary or terminology might have come from, because we tend to associate that as a negative, because it comes from hired models who have no understanding of whatever products they're selling. They're just there to attract the attention of the straight male audience, or the overwhelmingly straight male audience, which is quite frankly, it's insulting to everyone involved.
Well, but yeah.
You know, it's insulting to the models, it's insulting to the audience, the assumption that they're all straight men who are so base that they can only really act on sexual impulses rather than on actual, you know, interest in a product.
It's a shiny thing. It's just a shiny thing to catch their eye and be like, oh, what's happening over there? I mean, if I saw a character, like a hired model as a character from a game or a series that I liked, I'd totally be over that. I mean, I'd probably chat her up like she's a person, but that's because I have actually done a couple, like, modeling gigs, and lo and behold, we're people.
Right.
But getting back to this article, the other quote I want to center in on is he's drawing a distinction between the Felicia Day contributor, pretty girl, actual geek with the, he says model cum geeks like Olivia Munn, which I don't even get the context of the Olivia Munn hate, but whatever. She's the best part of the newsroom. Terrible show. But anyway, quote, these chicks, not geeks. I think that their rise is due to the fact that corporations are figuring out that geeks have money and they want it, but they can't abide putting a typically geeky face on camera. That's an interesting thing, typical geeky face.
What does that mean?
So they hire models to act quirky and sell this marketable geekdom. So I could understand why someone completely ignorant could look at Felicia Day and see a pretty woman who is making one heck of a career starring roles celebrating fandom and mentally file them along with the fake Geek G4 hostesses. And he says that's a bad thing, but he can understand. And I'm like, I'm 100% with you. But that's not the model. That's the corporation that you're buying stuff from. Mm-hmm. But he's like, no, it's these hot bitches.
Yeah, I don't know. I think.
You know what? I don't want to make assumptions about people. But when I hear stuff like this, all I hear is, why isn't she responding to my phone calls? Why isn't she going on dates with me? Why isn't she looking at me? She wouldn't give me the time of day.
Why won't it's you like, give me the attention that I obviously deserve to get as a man in this world? I must get attention from you.
No, it's terrible. It's not, you know, they're poaching the attention that should be going to him. That's what you cut to the core of it, and that's I can't help but see that. I mean, it's not true for him, but I don't see what other conclusion you can draw other than a guy who's angry and resentful about hot girls getting attention and seeking to dismiss or belittle them in some way to make diminish to what?
To make himself feel better.
Something. Yeah.
Well, it certainly, I would say, it sort of fits.
Himself feel like I'm legitimate, you're not.
Exactly.
And that makes me feel better about you being so hot over there and me not.
And getting so much attention. Yeah, I think it certainly fits his profile of his website, which I don't know if it's a persona that he creates and fabricates for this in order to sell himself professionally, not in a sexual way or any way,
because that would be wrong.
But like, if you look at his website, it drips arrogance, and it drips so much arrogance that it's almost unbearable to me to read how he profiles himself and sort of like sells his work. And it was like, look at me, I'm the most amazing, important person in the world. You know, his sort of like phrasing of his work is like, oh, he teaches the internet this. That sort of self-importance just baffles me. Like, and my ego is pretty big, but
you know what they say about guys with big egos?
Lots of inflation potential. That's not what they say. No.
There's nothing inflated about my love for you, Farouk.
Okay, this should not become a podcast of a mutual love fest.
Why not? There needs to be more love in this world. There needs to be more genuine appreciation, not the kind of appreciation that the French legislature was was affording.
You're just powering through these agenda points.
That wasn't on the agenda. I was talking about
future agenda
current events. Yeah, I mean that's harassment. And what we're talking about I think it's a harassment of a different kind. It's passive aggression. And it's weird when people kind of take it upon themselves to discount a segment of our community. I do wonder about the intent and the motivation behind
right.
it. And this feels very transparent.
Yeah, and I would say it certainly hints at a very common pattern I see surrounding the fragility of the male ego. When
what?
When
you're
women,
not supposed to admit that you're one of them.
I am one of them. That is well. That certainly gives me the credibility to assess this, I would say.
Oh,
yeah.
I see.
But this is such a common pattern, and I'm not saying that Mr. Joe Peacock is exhibiting this for sure, but he's certainly following the pattern.
I can't help but giggle at that name.
Right. Yeah, and that's where I think maybe he's creating a persona out of this name? I don't know. I think he is one of those guys who, regardless of the persona of the Peacock personality, fabricated as, or not as it might be, he's one of those guys that certainly means well, has his heart in the right place, tends to do his best not to overtly or actively or certainly in real life, in person, trouble or harass or otherwise marginalize women.
He seems like one of those stereotypical nice guys.
Until the point where they sort of don't get what they want, they don't get the attention they feel they deserve at that point or at this given time, and it happens to be a woman that is running away with the attention or the prize or the promotion at work, you know, anything along these lines. And then they turn very bitter and sour and accusatory. Accusatory?
Yeah. You got it.
English being a second language for me sometimes gives me those, you know, questionable moments. How do I pronounce this?
That's all right. I feel like English is a second language to a lot of people on the internet, so. You're doing great.
It'll be fun creating an entire podcast out of this. Well, we're at 42 minutes so far. I feel that we have
a most auspicious number.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, there's one last thing. I'm super into quoting this guy. I think I'm giving him a little bit more more attention than I think he deserves. But there's one more thing I'd like to kind of point at before we wrap it up, and that's which you should always do, wrap it up. We're like really sneaking in these like innuendos, but they got to be responsible innuendos anyway. So Mr. Peacock says, there's no doubt girls in geek culture have it hard, and it's probably going to be that way for a long time, which wasn't there, at least until men stop lusting after women. So, like, never. Which, that's like the, that's, you know.
It's a boys will be boys excuse all over.
Oh, I'm just like, dude, how old are you? There comes a time in every community's lifespan where you realize, no, it's not inherent. People are making choices.
Yeah, one could simply say, there comes a time where you need to actually grow up as a person.
Yeah, and you need to grow up as a community, and we're doing a really good job of that, I think. Like, a couple years ago, fat, ugly, or slutty didn't exist. It wasn't part of the conversation. It was.
But the harassment was there all the same.
Oh, yeah. And it's a given. But now the conversation has shifted from it's a given to, no, it's not a given. Why is it? Why do you think it's a given? And this is one of those assumptions that guys and their behavior, you know, generated from their lust for these ladies, these hot women who are inciting all this attention. So don't look at them; they're too hot. They shouldn't be here. That's always going to be the problem, and it's not. That's never been the problem. The lust isn't the problem. The being attractive or unattractive is never the problem. It's the choices that people make not to be humane to each other. And that's what this podcast is all about. And that's when I hope that Joe kind of figures out that, that you don't let it just transpire because for you, it's inherent. One has nothing to do with the other. There's just correlation. I'm rambling. This is such a tired,
moment for us to point out how, You know, this is a very inclusive podcast. We hope for it to be very inclusive. And that means we don't just want to be inclusive towards audiences in general as listeners. We want the audience to participate and be included in the show, primarily by means of submitting questions.
Yes, please.
In part because we know that a lot of people have a lot of questions about these complex, highly nuanced issues in our industry, in our community, in our society in general. And we would like to address, or at least analyze and discuss these questions. So if you have any questions for White Knight Academy of any kind about, you know, race, gender, discrimination, equality, feminism, inclusivity, how to create inclusive cultures at work or in your community, any questions along those lines at all, please send them in. And
we might even bring you on and let you talk about it.
Yeah.
If you're the right kind of geek.
Right. Yeah, if you qualify for geekdom properly and accordingly,
you gotta make the grade.
Yeah,
you gotta prove your merit to get into the academy.
Yeah, but and then there's a test, but after the test there will be cake.
You know what they say about cake, Farouk?
It's a lie.
That's always a lie. But anyway, I actually have a surprise for you. I would like to introduce a potential special segment on the show. We strive to be inclusive. We strive to be empathetic. We strive to be positive and encouraging and welcoming. But at a certain point, it just gets really exhausting and you just want to fuck around. So I would like to put it out there that sometimes even the most stridently articulate and politically correct among us, there are moments that we slip up, and I think that those should be embraced. I think that forgiveness is a big element of an inclusive community. So, that being said, I'd like to propose a segment, which is the most genuinely offensive questions or statements that you want to ask. There's no fear of being ostracized or shunned or anything. But if you have a genuine statement or question, and you want to have it put on the air, and there's no stupid questions here, is what I'm trying to say. So. I would like to introduce the first stupid question, which is,
I thought you said there are no stupid questions.
Not judge stupid questions. The questioner.
We're not here to judge, however stupid your question might be.
There we go. So, I had a question. I was parking my car today, and I live in a neighborhood where cars get stolen a lot. And I was wondering about how that might be in parallel to rape culture. So here's my potentially very offensive question. Is being a rapist and just going through the world where the average, you know, Western community, there's going to be a lot of women who, you know, you can see at least 10% of their skin at any given time. Is being a rapist walking, you know, moving through our modern world like being a car thief? Walking down the street with open car windows. Food for thought.
I was just going to say, like, are you asking this question to me? I would hope not.
No, I mean, there's the stolen goods analogy is problematic, as we like to say in the world of feminism. It's problematic. But, I think it brings up a couple things. One is, you know, it's that sort of, are you inviting negative attention if you do XYZ? If you leave your windows rolled down, if you leave your car unlocked, if you park in that neighborhood.
You kinda, want the audience to think about that, or do you want us to actually discuss this now?
You can think about it.
If
you're driving a hot, you know, a hot, you got a hot, you know, sort of bod going on, and you're moving through a space where there's a lot of temptation for abuse of that, like being dressed up in a hot way and going to a convention where there might be some people who respond to that in a certain way. Yeah. Food for thought. There's your offensive question.
There's your homework. Dear listener. I think that's a good way to wrap it up.
Yeah.
We'll leave everyone hanging with something awkward and uncomfortable to consider.
Exactly. Go home and think about it yourself. Think, kind of mull over it in your own way. Because I think a lot of these issues could use a lot of independent personal criticism, critical thinking. So there you go.
And in the meantime, you can also just send us questions for us to address on future episodes at whitenightacademy@gmail.com.
Yay!
All right. Well, thank you for listening. This was the inaugural, officially unofficial episode of White Knight Academy. My name is Farooq Atesh.
I'm Corey Johnson.
And thank you.
Have a great week.